Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 31st, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, happy Memorial Day, at least to our American listeners. I don't know if you remember celebrating Memorial Day when you lived in the US, but it's Memorial Day today.
Absolutely fantastic. The beginning of the summer, I seem to remember that's what it celebrates. I'm celebrating having my second jab.
Oh, wow.
I am feeling a little groggy, but I don't know if that's because I didn't sleep well last night or because of some effects of the jab itself. But
maybe too long at the pub yesterday.
Well, I'm going to go down there tonight. And obviously, this is pre-recorded, yeah. So that would be Friday of last week. So hopefully I survive that.
All right. Sounds good. As usual, we've got Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business as our sponsor. So we're going to hear a little bit of information about them, and then we'll get into it. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. All right, so Alex,
Before you get into it, I wonder if they have a pub, because I remember at Wharton, they have a pub. I don't know if all top schools have pubs, but I think having a pub is a good thing as part of the MBA experience.
I think most of the MBA programs have a kind of social thing around, you know, a pub or whatever. I mean, LBS, I was always shocked that the Winchester, I think it's called. There's literally a pub in the campus, like a proper British pub that's part of the campus. So
nice.
Before we kind of go over what's been happening in MBA admissions, I wanted to say that this is the 99th time that we have recorded a Wiretaps episode, which means that, we got 99 podcasts, right? So we've got one more next week, which will be number 100, and we're trying to do something special. And I don't know if you want to talk about this, but we have a great idea and we need our listeners to help us though.
Yeah, we're just trying to, if you would be willing, if you've listened to several episodes or whatever, just sort of share your thoughts in a 30-second voice memo and email it to info@clearadmit.com. And we could then work that content directly into the 100th episode. If you've been featured on Wiretaps, talk to us a little bit about how that feature was and whether it sort of helped you, guide you in any positive way, or hopefully not in any negative way. But it would be good to, 30-second clips would be great to get some audio from the audience for that 100th episode. A couple of other data points, Graham. 200,000 listens to all the podcasts together. I just think that's quite impressive. I mean, I'm proud of that, and I know I only work on the Wiretap side of it, and you do other podcasts with other folks in the MBA industry. So Wiretaps doesn't account for all the 200,000 listeners, but nevertheless, I think that's got to be a pretty impressive number, Graham.
Yeah, we literally just crossed that threshold. So 200,515. Listens to our show. And yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
And I would love for people to send in little audio recordings.
Yeah.
You can literally pick up your smartphone. If you have an iPhone, go to the voice memos thing. You've probably never used it, but it's there. It comes with your phone. And you literally press record. It'll record whatever you say. And you can share it, email it to info@clearadmit.com. And actually, even on Android, they also have the same thing. I think it's called Voice Recorder. And you can do the same thing. Just spend 30 seconds talking about the show. If you were featured, talk about, like you said, any advice we gave that was helpful. If you're just a listener and there's something that you like about the show, or, you know, tell us what you do when you listen to Wiretaps. We've had a lot of fun with that kind of stuff. Yeah, just send us your audio. And I think you got to send it, though, by this Friday, or else we won't be able to squeeze it in. So please send it ASAP. And we really appreciate you taking a moment to do it.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Alex, what else is going on, though, to give us the rundown? Are we still seeing waitlist stuff?
I mean, on Livewire last week, we saw some waitlist movement. Harvard, it looks like Harvard's gone to their waitlist a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, if Harvard's going to their wait list, even if it's a little bit, that trickle-down effect, we might see some activity over the next week or two.
Yeah.
I do see Duke cut a lot of folks off their wait list. So
yeah, I saw that.
Clearly, schools are basically reshaping their wait list now that round three decisions are out and they sort of know, have a better sense of their overall candidate pool for this coming fall. Schools are doing two things. One essentially is shrinking that wait list to what we would call a summer wait list. So every school will keep a smaller population on the wait list over the summer so they can hit their targets. As well as, I think, like we say, we've seen some schools actually admitting folk off the wait list. And if Harvard is admitting folk off the wait list, that means schools underneath Harvard will be doing the same. And since most schools are underneath Harvard, it's could actually be quite some activity over the next week or two.
Yeah, agreed. So we'll stay tuned. Obviously, our thoughts are with everyone that's sitting on a wait list. We know how difficult that is. I've been there personally myself. So yeah, hang in there and stay tuned. On the other side of it, more and more schools are releasing deadlines, essay topics. So we'll just keep updating clearadmit.com with that stuff. Speaking of the website, I don't know if you saw, Alex, but somebody gave an anonymous donation to Wharton in Bitcoin. So I guess I wonder if they gave it to them before or after the Bitcoin market kind of crashed recently.
That wasn't George, was it?
You know, it's anonymous. He was in my class at Wharton and he's like a major Bitcoin guy. So I wrote to him.
He's a Bitcoin cheerleader. Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote to him right away, but I did not get a response yet. So
yeah.
We will see.
I could tell you two stories about my relationship with George, but neither of them are publishable.
Yeah, that's about
not even close.
Yeah, that fits with my experience with George too. He was in my cohort at Wharton.
Yeah, fantastic guy, smart as a whip, but yeah. Super guy.
But in any event, Wharton getting some money or virtual, whatever you want to call it, crypto. Stanford, we did a nice article on Stanford. They've done a conference about entrepreneurship and diversity. So that was a really interesting piece. We also ran a couple of more real humans. One is a woman who graduated from NYU Stern and is a marketing manager at PepsiCo. And then the other is an HBS grad who is the senior, is a senior oncology specialist at Amgen. So another kind of healthcare related, and the first one being a consumer packaged goods. So we're trying to cover more and more fields, possible kind of destinations post-MBA. Those are a great resource. You can read all the real humans on the site. We've got just so many at this point, people who've done consulting, banking, tech, whatever it is, check it out. And then we also ran a little piece, this is kind of a repost from LBS. There's a student at LBS who wrote a piece about what it's like being out, and, you know, being gay at LBS and, you know, the different, I guess there's a LBS Out in Business Club. And so there's kind of an interesting piece on that that we ran. I encourage people to read that as well. And then other than that, I know we want to get into our wiretaps portion and review some candidates, but I did want to mention to people that we've got these events that we're doing in July. I talked about them last week. It's literally three Wednesdays in a row in July, starting on the 14th, and they're always at noon Eastern, and we've got their essay workshops. So we sit down with leading business schools, and we grill them with questions about their essay questions and like how to respond to them. So this isn't fluff stuff. We really dive in and ask, you know, kind of meaningful questions to figure out what are they looking for? Why are they asking the questions they've asked, and how should you go about starting to write them? The schools on board for these events, it's an amazing list. We've got Berkeley, Wharton, MIT, Yale, Duke, UT Austin, Tuck, Cornell, Ross, UNC, UCLA, CMU, Tepper, and the team tells me that there are more coming. So this is a lot of fun. Sign up for those on the website and yeah, get your spot reserved. And then the last thing, Alex, before we dive in, is that we've got our clubhouse today. Even though it's Memorial Day, we're going to do a little clubhouse from noon to 1 Eastern. So join in if you want to chat and ask questions about the admissions process.
Yeah, now the folks on Android can do that too, right? So yes. Clubhouse is now available on Android, but you still need an invite.
Yeah,
so,
if you need an invite, though, you could always email info@clearadmit.com because we, across our team, we have tons of invites, so we could always get you an invite. So if you want to join us on Clubhouse and ask questions, just send an email to info@clearadmit and ask, and we'll get you one. Alex, that's about it. I mean, there's nothing much else going on this week. We've got three really great candidates to review, and there's a lot to say about them. So I suggest we kick on.
Kick on. Very good.
All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this candidate is looking to start school in the fall of 22. They've got 8 schools on the target list, and those schools are Cambridge, Cornell, ESA, INSEAD, MIT, NYU, Oxford, and Stanford. And they've been working in travel and tourism for about 10 years. That's their pre-MBA career. And they'd love to get into consulting or tech or even consumer goods. They have a whole bunch of options on the table for post-MBA. Their undergraduate GPA was a 4.0. This candidate is a woman. She is based out of Germany and is German and is, I guess, in Berlin, she mentioned. So the kicker here is that she's 35 years old and she's got a couple of kids, and she says she's been thinking about getting an MBA on and off for a few years and thinks that it's kind of now or never. And she goes through a whole bunch of information about her role. She's been, you know, had a pretty good career in kind of PR and tourism. And she actually had a chance to live in New York City for several years. So interesting candidate, but it also sounds like she might have been working a little bit more part-time and wants to kind of kickstart her career now that the kids are, as she says, they're 1 and 4 years old. So Alex, what do you make of this candidacy? They haven't taken the GMAT. She hasn't taken the GMAT yet, but she expects to do well. But there are a lot of different factors here, but what do you make of her?
Yeah, I mean, I expect her to do well too, just simply based off of everything else she's done. This is a person that does things well, has had impact. I have no doubt about that when she ultimately writes these applications and stuff. But it's a little bit of an unorthodox candidacy, right? This is a person that's had a good career, done very well, and then sort of has stepped back from the career a little bit. I think whilst they step back from the career a little bit, they sort of sustained some level of involvement on a part-time basis. I'm sort of speculating there a little bit, but that's sort of what I'm gathering from what I'm reading. Whilst, you know, she's married and whilst she had her two young children, which is absolutely fantastic. Now she wants to ratchet it back up again and thinks that the full-time MBA is a good vehicle for her to then sort of really run with it and get back into a really active sort of corporate situation. And I couldn't agree more in terms of, yes, it absolutely would. The challenge will be to convince ADCOM that, one, that she's ready for a very intensive 2-year or 1-year MBA experience. And I would also like to see a little bit more focus in terms of what she sees herself doing directly after the MBA and in the longer run. Mm-hmm. Because I think she's taking a pretty big punt going after the full-time MBA. But by doing that, she should absolutely have a well-defined path that she's really thought through going forward. But I got to think that this is a sort of person that would make the most of an MBA opportunity and really sort of, like, you know, drink, you know, whatever from the Kool-Aid and the fire hose or whatever, and really make the most of it. I have no doubt about that, Graham. One thing that she's debating, and I'll throw this back to you, she wants to ultimately be in the United States. She's currently in Germany. Her husband, or I think it's her husband, is American. So they're planning to go back to America at some point. So the question is, should she pursue a 2-year MBA out of the United States, or because she's older, and this is her concern that she wrote about, should she focus on a 1-year MBA? And we know that European schools are typically, that's their model, other than, you know, a few outliers like London Business School, ESA or whatever. The top schools in Europe are typically 1 year versus the top schools in the United States, typically 2 years. So that's the dilemma that she's wrestling with.
Yeah, and she asked a very specific question, which was, are the top European schools as prestigious as the American kind of Ivy schools? And I think, you know, the answer to that question is it depends where you are, right? So I think, you know, in the UK, having an MBA from London Business School or even INSEAD or Cambridge or Oxford is going to be great if you're looking for work there. To be fair to those schools, it's also a great degree to have if you're looking at many markets, right? But if you were to ask me, like, would it be better if you're looking for a job in the United States to have a degree from, you know, Columbia, or you know, I can't remember some of the other ones on our list that are in the U.S., Sloan. I would give the nod to the U.S. programs, right? Because there's this geographic pull, and there's also just greater awareness. So, but it's a tricky thing because I think she also would benefit, if she can afford it from a timeline standpoint, I think she would benefit from the immersive nature of kind of a two-year offering where she could really stretch out, spend a whole year on sort of core curriculum type stuff and then get into electives in year two, do an internship. I mean, she really wants to kind of pivot her career and make this big leap forward that may take a little time. And I just wonder, like, if she dives into a short form MBA, that could be challenging on a number of levels. I mean, just because, I just feel like it's harder to kind of restart a career with such a short thing. And again, if she's looking for work in the U.S. right afterwards, I feel like going to America is the way to go. But yeah, it's a tough call.
When you were at Wharton, Graham, I mean, she's 35, I think she said.
Yes.
Students at that age in your class?
There were a couple. There aren't many, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. There are always a couple. And
no.
And I think that's what we're banking on here, is that she has a great undergraduate GPA. She actually went to school for undergrad in the UK.
Mm.
And as I said earlier, she's lived in New York for like 6 years as well. And so I feel like she ticks some extra boxes there in terms of being, I don't know what, this is the wrong expression, but like a safe bet, right? So that like she's already studied in English, she's lived in the US. So this isn't like someone who might be a fish out of water or something. And yet she also ticks the box of being from Germany, which is a market that the U.S. business schools have always struggled with tapping into, even some of the European business schools, because Germany is not a big MBA market. The degree is not as well recognized in Germany.
Yeah.
Most people have doctorates to be taken seriously in Germany. So it's, so I feel like she could do it, but she's going to need to show that she's ready to dive in head first. She's going to need to get a good test score to kind of complement her great GPA. But, my view is she is one of these, if there are two or three folks in a class, at any given top school, she fits that mold. Like she could do it as long as she does a good job on her application. So I like her candidacy a lot.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And she does appear to be the sort of person that, like you say, she'll study hard. She'll do well in this standardized test. There aren't, U.S. schools are not overwhelmed with applicants from Germany. Her work experience does actually look very, very good. She's done very well. I wish her the best of luck. But I think we can summarize to answer the question, Graham: 1 year Europe MBA versus 2 year US based MBA at sort of comparable sort of schools. We would go for the 2 year US MBA.
Right, given her goal of working in America. And I will just want to underline, before we move on, I want to underline that she does need to refine her career plan. Like, I think she needs, she has a lot of plausible ideas she's laid out, but she needs to just pick one. And in my mind, ideally, it would be somehow related to some of her past skills and experience. Because again, it's easier for the admissions committee, I think, to follow a kind of thread that runs from your past to the future than to be sort of reinventing yourself 100%, especially at age 35, right? So,
And someone with 10 years of experience should have a good thought of their plan going forward versus someone with 1 or 2 years of experience. They're going to be a bit more flaky.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, well, I really appreciate her posting and best of luck. And hopefully now that we've discussed her candidacy, maybe she'll record a little audio clip and send it to us for the episode next week. All right, so...
In English, please.
Yeah, in English. Yeah, because I don't speak German. I don't know about you, but...
No.
All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 2. So this is a candidate who is applying to 7 schools for the fall of 22. Those schools are Dartmouth, Harvard, Kellogg, Chicago, Wharton, Darden, and Yale. This candidate has worked in something called crisis communications consulting, and they want to pivot out of that maybe into tech or consumer goods, although still in a bit of a kind of information management or chief information officer, I think they said, or even chief communications officer type role. And they've got Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Tesla on the list. Their GMAT score is a 720, GPA 3.76. They've got 8 years of work experience, and it's actually a really interesting experience that we'll get into here. And they are located in Portland, but want to end up in Atlanta. So a kind of, cross-country move. And I did want to say before we get into it with them, they wrote a really nice review, which we'd read back several episodes ago, I guess on episode 146. And they also write in their note on the ApplyWire entry, "Graham and Alex, thank you for all you do. I've listened to every episode of the podcast on Spotify. I'm using it as motivation for GMAT prep and as a pseudo case study method to learn the ins and outs of the MBA admissions process at top tier schools." So nice comments there. I think that, you know, this means that this person and maybe our producer Dennis might be the only one to have ever listened to every episode. No, but in all seriousness, what do you make of this candidate? Because they, you know, there's a lot to like, but they're, you know, 8 years of experience and they're looking to make a pivot.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you make of them?
Yeah, I don't think that their goals are much of a pivot, honestly, Graham. They're in crisis communications consulting. We haven't gone into the detail of that, but let's just say it's top-notch experience. They've got exposure to top-notch organizations. It sounds like they've done fantastic stuff, and their long-term goal is to be a CIO or Chief Communications Officer, CIO of a Fortune 100 company. So to me, it just sort of, you know, they want to go from the consulting side, telling people what to do, to actually being in the company, actually doing it. So I get all that. I think their work experience is absolutely super fantastic. I think their out of work experience is absolutely super fantastic. I think their goals are perfect. There's only one little question mark for this candidacy in my book. And I'm still not sure if it's a question mark. They got a 720 on the GMAT, right, which is a ridiculously high score. But it's the quant side of the GMAT, and their academic training might give the ADCOM a little bit of queasiness in terms of that sort of quantitative aspect of their of their candidacy.
Yeah.
But they're taking MBA math. I mean, I just don't get it, Graham. I think this is a super candidate all around the block. And 3.76 GPA, 8 years of experience. So yeah, just make sure they really nail that they'll be fully engaged in the program and the fit and those issues. But they should be applying to top schools in my book.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I mean, some of the stuff that we're kind of resonating with is that they, you know, they've done this sort of PR type work and communications, crisis communication strategy and things for, you know, clients all around the world and big time clients. So I think they've had a lot of rich experience. They also, I mean, on the side, they've done like 11 foreign humanitarian trips. So
it's crazy, Graham. This is a top notch dude.
Yeah, or gal, or it's dude gender neutral.
Yeah, yeah.
But this person, the other thing that stands out to me is like we should hire this person to promote our podcast, because they always, the review that they wrote and then the comments they wrote here are like really nicely put.
Well, maybe they'll do a 30-second audio clip and send it in this week. That'll be great.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. But the thing that I'm gonna go back to is they have this great GPA, 3.76, and you know, but it was in Spanish and communications. And as you point out, you know, their quantitative performance on the GMAT leaves a little to be desired. I mean, the overall score, as you said, is great. 720 puts them in the ballpark at top schools. But there is this little bit of a, you know, when I'm an admissions reader looking at a candidate with a kind of qualitative background, both in work and in, you know, kind of academics, I'm, you know, looking for evidence that they can kind of survive the rigors of the curriculum. Now, they're taking MBA math. They did, you know, they did take the GMAT, and the math score leads a little to be desired. But if you couple it with MBA math and a real motivation and a kind of clear set of goals, I think it flies. So I like this candidate. I feel like they can land where they want to land. I guess I was a little puzzled over school selection. I mean, it seems to lean, you know, kind of M7 and then a handful of others. And I had mentioned in a comment to them that I was wondering why Duke wasn't on the list, given their goal to land in Atlanta. And they mentioned they were worried about it being, you know, just sort of a fit thing. Or they were also, some of the people in their network said that it's
a basketball school.
Yeah, I know, which I thought was a little unfair. Like, I mean, Duke is a, you know, kind of a top 10 or top 12 MBA program or something. So I just wondered if they might want to look at it more closely. Obviously, it's hard to visit right now, but I think, I don't know if they were planning on going out east, I thought I'd read. But in any event, it might be worth taking a closer look, because I think it has a lot of the same attributes as some of the other schools on their list, like Darden, that might appeal to them.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I was going to ask you is, you know, I noticed they had like Chicago Booth on the list, Kellogg. I mean, do those schools make sense for you for someone trying to get down into Atlanta? Are you thinking, well, if they want to work in consumer goods or at a big Fortune 100 company in a communications or, you know, whatever type role, does that work for you? Like, I mean, I get these are top schools, and so it seems like they're just aiming for the top.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, where they want to be in Atlanta, there's not a top school in Atlanta. There's a very good school, Emory Goizueta, in that sort of top 20 bracket, no doubt. It's a very good school.
Yeah.
But this candidate belongs into it in an M7 program, as far as I can figure out. So at the end of the day, an M7 program will place them in Atlanta, one way or another. They got Wharton on the list.
Go,
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wharton's,
that's fair.
What a lot of people don't realize, and I like to brag about it a little bit, is Wharton's marketing department is second to none. in terms of, you know, their research production and so on and so forth. So if you're going into, you know, chief information officer or whatever, that's a marketing function no matter which way you cut it. So I could see why Wharton sits there on the list. Kellogg, sort of along the same lines, very good marketing, communications and stuff. So yeah, I hope this, you know, I mean, the key with a candidate like this, I mean, 8 years of experience, a little bit on the top end. So make sure they really show fit. That's going to be very important. Like we say, with this quant side might make a couple of outcome a little bit queasy, but doing the MBA math, I think, is shoring that side of it up. What I would say is, you know, have a round one strategy, aim high and see what sticks. And if we're wrong, then you've got round two to readjust.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, it's funny hearing all these great candidacies that we review like week in and week out. It makes me want to, we could almost build like a dream team. Like we should start our own MBA program, right? And like we could fill it with all these amazing candidacies because it really is inspiring. I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, this person wrote a very long ApplyWire entry that has just tons of detail, and this person's done some amazing things. So I wish them all the best of luck, and I'll, I'm sure they'll keep us posted as they progress. And yeah, send us an audio clip if you can for the next episode. Alex, anything else on this one before we move on?
No, I can't emphasize enough, the work experience and the outside of work experience really puts this guy on a different level.
Yeah.
Kudos to what they've accomplished.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another ApplyWire entry, which means we've kind of passed into the new season, I feel like, where we have so many ApplyWire entries that we're going to focus there. This person's got 5 schools on the target list. They are Berkeley, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, and Stanford. They want to start school next fall, 22. They have a pre-MBA career in innovation consulting, and they love to get into tech, and the companies of interest are Apple, Google, LinkedIn, and Spotify. GRE score is a whopping 336. That might be the high for the program. I don't know if we've had anyone with a higher score than that. GPA is a 3.15, and they've got 4 years of work experience. They're located in the U.S., and they want to land anywhere outside of the southern U.S., so it sounds like they're not going to be hanging out with the candidate that we just profiled.
Yeah.
And they write, "Hi, Alex and Graham, longtime listener, first-time caller. I'm an African-American female who studied chemical engineering at a top 20 undergrad, and I work in innovation consulting." It goes on from there. There's a lot of detail and stuff. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, before we came on air, we talked about this a little bit, but anyone that studies chemical engineering better be a rocket scientist or some ridiculously, wickedly smart person, because I just seem to remember that that's probably the toughest of the engineering disciplines, and engineering itself is a tough discipline. And this person, they got a 315, and they say, you know what, they realised that partway through the programme that this wasn't for them. That meant their GPA suffered. But they also made a deliberate move to get more involved in outside of academic activities to really make the most of that undergraduate experience, despite the fact that they were in a major that they weren't particularly engaged with or thrilled about. So they're going to have to, position that a little bit carefully, I think, in the applications, which I think they can do. Having this 336 GRE to sort of help frame that is ridiculous. I mean, fair play. I mean, they're obviously wickedly smart. And yeah, there's a lot to like about this candidate, Graham. I mean, I hate to say it, but from a diversity standpoint, they're top notch. They hit a lot of markers. I can see their goals. It makes sense in terms of what they want to do. I think it's product management sort of idea in tech. You know, you're going to have some kind of engineering discipline to make that switch. So hopefully she can still draw back on that. But yeah, she's just going to have to overcome this 315. But again, it's in chemical engineering. She's got the 336 GRE. Looks like she's done well at work. Looks like she does things outside of work, although, frankly, I forget exactly what she covered there. But I think she does things within work outside of her direct responsibilities too, which is very good. And yeah, I think schools are going to love this candidate.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I want to ask you a question. So first of all, I agree. Like, that GPA is low, but it's chemical engineering. And the GRE helps compensate. She did mention she took stats and macro at a local college and did well. Yeah. So I feel like she's ticking the boxes on like helping to shore up the concern around the GPA. She did say, though, you know, we both recommended in the comments, like, oh, you might want to, in an optional essay, just explain what happened with your undergraduate GPA. And, you know, she said, thanks, Alex and Graham. What are some points you'd recommend highlighting in an optional essay? I don't feel I have anything extenuating. It was more that I realized I was uninterested in chem engineering too late and focused on extracurriculars as a way to be more fulfilled. I do plan to cite my GRE score and the classes I've taken since in the essay. But I think she's just wondering, like, is there anything else she needs to do? And how do you, like, you know, on the one hand, she gets points for being a chem engineer major, but if she then goes on in the optional essay to say, well, I hated it or something, then it's sort of like, do the points get detracted a bit? Or is it like, how should she tackle that optional essay?
I don't think the points get detracted as much as, you know, there's probably a point in her academic career where she realized post-graduation, I'm not going to go work for DuPont or ICI or whatever and continue this path, right? So I'm going to pivot coming out of undergrad. And because I'm going to do that, I'm less engaged or less sort of inspired by the chemical engineering curriculum because I've been through it, you know, maybe two or three years of it. And I've realized that, again, this pathway is not necessarily for me. To compensate for that, I got involved in lots of extracurricular activities to make the most of that four-year experience and to assure the ADCOM. Well, I don't even need to think she needs to say it, but say I've also subsequently taken the stats and the economics or whatever, gotten A's, and I got a 336 GRE score. To me, if I read that and it was sort of pretty honest, straightforward, it's only a paragraph, I would kind of appreciate that, Graham.
Yeah, I hear you. I think you're dead on with the fact that it's just a paragraph, and I think she can just state that, you know, I recognize my undergraduate GPA is, you know, not where it needed to be. I, you know, did not ultimately end up pursuing a career in chemical engineering because it ended up not being something that I wanted to pursue.
Yeah.
You know, she can think about how to better phrase it because I'm just sort of stumbling along here. But I think, you know, mentioning, and then I would say, you know, something to the extent of like, my hope is that the admissions committee will look at my result on the GRE coupled with the fact that I've taken macro and stats very recently and performed well as a measure of my readiness for business school. So I think it's something as simple as that, but I wish her the best of luck. The other thing we did talk about though is, you know, where should she apply? I kind of want to push her to apply to the very best in the first round. And we mentioned some schools that she should look at. And she said that, you know, Sloan was something she was not so sure about cultural fit. And then Wharton, she's still investigating. So those weren't on the list. But it sounds like she's open to, you know, kind of adding schools or reconfiguring the list. And so I would say go big in round one, like just aim super high. You might land an acceptance and some substantial dollars as, you know, kind of scholarship. I mean, that GRE score is a nice way to help sometimes influence scholarship dollars. So I feel like, yeah, I would apply to some top schools in the first round and see what happens and then go to some of these other schools in round two if need be, because I don't feel like she has to worry about being like from an overrepresented group where in round two the slots are starting to fill up or something.
Yeah, she'd be fine.
So yeah, aim high.
Let me ask you a question though, Graham. She says she doesn't think Sloan's a good fit. might not be a good fit. Why wouldn't Sloan be a good fit? What sort of candidate wouldn't think that Sloan is a good fit? She wants product management in tech.
Yeah, I'm worried more that it's the stereotype of Sloan, which, you know, all these schools have these stereotypes, right? So I think people think of Sloan as being, oh, it's like a big engineering school. So it's a bunch of like, you know, nerds with pocket protectors. It's really maybe very male environment or...
They don't use slide rules there, do they?
I don't know. So it's got that. But what's funny is that I find, you know, the MBA program there is, it's not, you know, it's, they're not part of the engineering school. It's a totally separate gig, right? So it's not the same thing. And I think people are often pleasantly surprised at the camaraderie. Yeah. It's a nice small program. It's in Boston. I mean, there's a lot to like about Sloan. And I also think it has the benefit of there's so much great opportunity for collaboration across schools at Sloan. So I think I would encourage her to take a close look. Same thing with Wharton. Wharton has a stereotype too, right? Of being like, oh, it's all kind of finance and quant jocks and maybe it's cutthroat. I mean, there are all these stereotypes out there. And I think it's a shame that they just persist. I'm not really sure why. I mean, Kellogg has a reputation being all about like teamwork and it's a sort of too touchy-feely or something. These are all like just, they're not really true. You got to go. And I mean, unfortunately, with COVID, people couldn't go and visit. But spending time on these campuses or just talking to students or, you know, reading The Real Humans on our site, connecting with alumni, whatever you can do, because some of these stereotypes are just not, they're not really accurate. So I think it's important to spend time getting to know these schools on your own terms.
Yeah. Gives a chance, a quick hat tip to our friend Rod Garcia, who again we talked about in the last podcast or whatever, retiring after about 35 million years at Sloan. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he doesn't look a day over 34 million.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we've wrapped up here. We've gone through our three candidates. Thanks for picking them out, Alex. And, thanks to the three, site users who shared their backgrounds. I'll be even more thrilled if they each send us a video that we can use in our special 100th episode.
Audio.
Yeah, no video. You don't want to see us. We don't want to see you. We're keeping it to radio here.
And one thing we haven't been clear about, you can remain anonymous. You don't have to tell us who you are.
Oh, yeah. That's totally fine. Yeah, it doesn't have to. Yeah. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back next week with some kind of an episode. Hopefully, it'll be a fun one to celebrate 100. And Alex, I'll see you really soon. And thanks for, you know, preparing all these candidates once again.
Brilliant. Happy Memorial Day in Paris, Ryan.
Thanks.
Stay safe, everyone.